Mr. New York, Mark Simone on WOR.
Well, it's Monday. It's hot, sizzling outside. Lots to get to. We'll get to Elijah Cummings. We'll get to tomorrow night's debates. We'll go over them, what you need to know. We'll get to Jeffrey Epstein and more. Look at this. Orkin Pest Control, they're the experts, has declared Baltimore one of the most rat-infested cities anywhere. I think this is going to get very interesting. I think the president, he has stepped on the third rail for Democrats, which is they have cities that are in total decay and ruins, and they do nothing about it for decades on end, and nobody mentions it. So now, what happens? Now the Elijah Cummings and Nancy Pelosi's and all these leaders with these terrible districts of squalor and horrible conditions, what do? Just yell racism and go back to sleep? Or will pressure be on them to fix it? And now Al Sharpton has jumped in and is yelling and screaming, and Donald Trump has called him a racist. And what makes Al Sharpton show up right now? Well, he just felt it was important. Something inside him made him want to jump in now and be a part of this. So president will not back down from Al Sharpton. He's already called him a race hustler, a con man, hates whites, hates cops. This is going to get very interesting.
Yeah, Trump's not one to back away from this stuff.
No, he's going to keep going, and he's going to triple down, quadruple down everything. And Democrats have a big problem. They love yelling racism when they run out of facts. That weapon may be useless after a while. He may make this into a several-month showdown and really get to the bottom of this. Why don't they fix their districts? Why does Elijah Cummings allow this to go on in Baltimore, this filth and squalor and rats and rodents? Why didn't he do anything about it? Or why didn't he resign? If he says he's been working his heart out and is working as passionately, well, then he's a failure. Why doesn't he quit? Let somebody else do it. It's going to be an interesting debate.
It's going to be tough answers for these guys, I think.
And, you know, whenever the reason you're not seeing too many of the residents on TV is fake news has gone in there to talk to them. But the problem is, whenever they talk to some residents, they go, the president's right. Why doesn't somebody do something? Why doesn't somebody help us? So they have been burying those interviews. They have not been running them. And, you know, those same residents, when they watch the debates tomorrow night, they don't want to hear about student loans and climate change. They want to know what's going to be done for them. And this is not about dividing up the country and increasing white voters for Trump. This is like getting minority voters in those neighborhoods start to realize, you know, don't run out and vote for the Democrats so fast. They're not doing anything for you. Just talk.
Democrats automatically count on that vote.
Yeah, but it's just talk, and people are starting to realize all they do is talk. And the president has a really good point. There's nothing racist about this. How dare Cummings yell at that border guy, bully him and screaming at him about conditions in the detention centers when the conditions in his neighborhoods that he's supposed to represent are far worse? Where is he on that? How come if you yell about conditions in the detention center, you're a hero? If you mention conditions in Baltimore, you're a racist. How does that work? Explain that to me.
These are illegal aliens. They're more important.
Yeah. To a lot of people to watch this guy fight for illegal aliens more than he's fighting for them, that says a lot to people. We can't get a response from Cummings because he, Pelosi, the squad, AOC, they're on a big vacation in Venice. They, like 12 of them had lunch at Cipriani. The bill was about $5,000. Don't laugh. You're paying for it. It's a taxpayer funded. They're staying in a five-star hotel. The bill will be in the hundreds of thousands for this vacation. And you, all of us, are paying for it.
How do they get away with that?
Because they're the ones that vote for all this. You could term limit them out, but they'd have to vote for it. Good luck with that. So tomorrow night's the debates. In Detroit, one of those areas where you got those kind of conditions, Democratic leadership for years, they've done nothing, absolutely nothing to fix it. So tomorrow night's the debates. Elizabeth Warren is going to yell about student loans. Nobody, she says, should profit from these student loans. This is a woman that charged $400,000 to teach one class. That's the reason the student loans are so high. People like her getting $1 million a year for teaching and lying to get the job. Remember I told you the other day about the Democrats, whenever there's an issue, They give you a 20-point plan, a 19-point plan. They've got a 30-point plan. Remember John Kerry?
Yeah, sure.
Well, you bring up any issue. I go to my website. I have a 15-point plan on how to. So apparently, that's what's going to happen tomorrow night. Biden got hit hard for his old. What was it? He signed years ago the crime bill,
right?
Which is now under the crazy left-wing progressive standards considered to be racist. Biden voted for this crime bill. So tomorrow night he will present a new comprehensive criminal justice plan.
Oh, gosh.
So it's quite a plan. Hopefully nobody will ask him about it because he's never read it. It's like Mueller with the Mueller report. What page is that? Mueller never read the Mueller report. You remember they asked him about Fusion GPS and he didn't know what that was? There's nobody in America that doesn't know what Fusion GPS is. And he didn't know what it was. So Biden has had a bunch of idiots write this criminal justice plan. Then they focus grouped it, and it's all set. Then a guy briefed him with the highlights of it, which he won't remember, and he's never read the plan. Kamala Harris will be unveiling her plan for safe drinking water.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's top of mind.
Yeah. And remember, it's Detroit, Michigan, which is right near Flint, okay, where they still have that water crisis.
Yeah.
So she has a plan for safe drinking water. You notice when Obama went to Flint, Michigan, and he looked at the situation, what was the cause of that? It was the pipes, right?
Yeah, they didn't upgrade the pipes.
He looked, they gave him a tour, and they showed him these bad pipes, and there's a picture of him looking at him going, you're right, these are bad pipes, and then he got on the plane and he left. Now, that's a politician. That's a bureaucrat. That's how you deal with the situation. You go there, take pictures, make a speech, then you leave. Now, if that were Donald Trump, and remember, this is his expertise, building, construction. He's probably put in a billion miles of pipe in his day in all these skyscrapers and all these buildings. So Trump is the kind of guy. Remember the Woolman rink?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't get this rink to work. 12 years. What did it cost? It was like $30 million trying to build an ice skating rink. So Trump comes in and looks at it and said, I'll get you the best ice guy in the world. And it's very logical. He thought, who has the best ice? The NHL. Hockey, and he called the NHL, and they said the best ice guy works for the Montreal Canadiens, and he called them and said, can I borrow the ice guy that builds the rinks for you guys? And they sent him down. That's how you get it done. So had Trump been in Flint, Michigan, it's not a speech and pictures. It's let's find the best pipe guy in the world. Who's the best pipe guys? And have him clean this up and redo the pipes. Did you ever see any Democrat do that? Or any Republican, for that matter? No bureaucrat would do that.
Speeches are better.
Yeah, make a speech and you leave. It's the Elijah Cummings routine. Grandstand in front of the cameras, make a speech and you're done. Beto O'Rourke. Anybody remember him? Remember Beto O'Rourke?
Wow, man, has he fallen?
Yeah, he's still out there, Beto O'Rourke. He's an old man now, hobbling around. This Beto O'Rourke tomorrow will release, this should turn everything around. It's an education equity plan. Again, he hasn't read it. But he's going to release this education equity plan. This is pretty big. This is big stuff.
Everybody's going to have a plan?
Everybody's got a plan. Elizabeth Warren has released a video. This is great. She had interviews where she predicted the economic recession right before 2008. So she's going to show you
good.
That.
Good, okay.
Except, this is, I don't want to mention the name, but there's a guy who on TV, I saw him on TV one night, and the night before the 2008 crash, he predicted it. It was unbelievable. He showed the video of him predicting it. So I remember asking Larry Kudlow about this. He said, no. He said, this guy, every night for like 10 years, predicted a crash. Finally, one night he was right. So I checked the guy's record. Sure enough, he had always predicted a crash every night on every show. And it finally happened, so he looked like a genius. Same thing with Elizabeth Warren. She was always predicting a recession. Yeah, she's okay. Predicting one right now. She'll do this for the next 3 years, 4 years, until there is a recession. And you just will say, see, what did I tell you? So the debate's, it's two nights, right? It's
yes.
Tuesday and Wednesday. And it's last time it was like a junior varsity. This is different. They've spread the big names over the two nights. So it'll be pretty even. And it's in Detroit, Michigan. It's CNN, so no real questions will be asked. They'll never ask anybody anything for real. No anchor on CNN is going to say to these people, hey, why don't you actually clean up these neighborhoods? They'll never be asking that. They'll make speeches about Trump and all that. So Jeffrey Epstein will never see him again.
Think so?
No, he's not going to get out. A lot of people all over New York, big people, big names, big society people, are going to have to probably go down to the U.S. Attorney's Office and explain their close relationship with Epstein. One is Andrew Farkas, the big billionaire hedge fund real estate guy.
Whoa.
Very close friend of Andrew Cuomo's. In fact, when Cuomo was out of office before running for governor, that's who he worked for. Now, it looks like Farkas was partners with Epstein in some business ventures, including a harbor down there in the Virgin Islands. I mean, it could be just business. I mean, I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong, but you got to explain that to what were you doing with this guy all the time? Nobody still quite knows what he did for a living. He wasn't a hedge fund guy. He apparently got close to, it started with Leslie Wexner and then a few other billionaires. He got very close to them, and he would give them advice on investments to the point where they would sign over power of attorney, and he would do the investments. But it was much more than that. He would figure out how to do their taxes for them, and if you do those tax schemes down in the Virgin Islands, you can save 90% of your taxes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, most people don't want to do this. It's a little complicated. It's technically legal, but who needs to go through that? He would do that kind of stuff for people. He would do their prenuptial agreements for them. He would fight their legal battles for them. He had teams of accountants, lawyers, all kinds of stuff. So it'd be like a one-stop thing for if you're a billionaire and you need help with stuff. So
it's kind of hard to earn like hundreds of millions of dollars doing that. I mean, you can.
Well, not really, because if you're talking about guys with $10 billion, $5 billion, $12 billion, and you're getting even 2% out of everybody.
Oh, okay.
After a while, you're up to $600, $700 million. The prosecutors have seen $580 million in assets of this guy, and they think they haven't seen it all. They think he may have more money stashed away around the world. And apparently, when he started working for the Victoria's Secret head, Leslie Wexner, years ago, he was doing a lot of work for him. He became very close to him, became like a son to him almost. Wexner pushing away his top advisors, letting Epstein take control. Because of that relationship, this is the guy that owned Victoria's Secret. Epstein went around acting like he was the recruiter for Victoria's Secret.
I bet.
And apparently back then it wasn't just 14-year-olds, it was older women in their 20s, but he would tell them that he was the recruiter for Victoria's Secret. If they wanted to be one of the top Victoria's Secret models, he would audition them. You know, auditions were held in his hotel room. And, you got to wonder.
We know how that worked.
You got to wonder who falls for this. Yeah, the audition is at 10 p.m. in my hotel room.
Obviously, people do.
So they would show up. This one says that as soon as she got in there, he invited her to his Santa Monica hotel room. He grabbed her. He tried to undress her. Tried to manhandle her. She fled in tears.
Okay.
Gee, I'd think if you went to a guy's hotel room at 10 o'clock at night, it would be different. But apparently, not. So this happened a number of times. They say Wexner was told about it a couple of times and said he'll take care of it. No one knows what he did about it. So this Ghislaine, whatever the hell her name is, Maxwell, was a big recruiter for him. She was the daughter of Robert Maxwell, who was another guy. They appeared to be these wealthy society types, but deep down, nobody knew if they actually had any money or anything. But apparently, Epstein set her up as he created a charity foundation and had her become the head of it. And the charity foundation bought a fabulous Upper East Side home to be its headquarters.
Oh, how nice.
Where she lived in the headquarters. And apparently, the charity only gave away in a five-year period $800. But hundreds and hundreds of thousands were pumped into it.
That's not legal.
It's not legal, but you can have a headquarters and the charity pay for it. Although legally you're required to give away 5% of your money every year. But listen, the Clinton Foundation, all that kind of stuff, the expenses are way out of whack. You know, the Clintons would take 50 people on a trip, stay in the finest 5-star hotels, private jets, and the charity would pay for the whole thing. And they'd go somewhere for 5 weeks. They'd go to Hawaii. But at some point, Clinton would have lunch with somebody who could be a donor. And then they'd write the whole trip off as a fundraising, development trip.
Good charity work.
Yeah. So, hey, you know who will be with us a little later? Ken Jennings.
Oh, the Jeopardy guy.
The Jeopardy champion. We'll ask him, if you've dreamed of being on Jeopardy, what is the secret of getting yourself on Jeopardy? What should you practice? I'll also ask him about this new guy. I don't like this new guy, this new winner.
Well, yeah, he's a loser now.
Yeah,
he's a gambler, right?
Yeah, I don't like this guy. Yeah. So we'll ask him what he thinks of this guy. We'll get to all of that coming up. Also, we'll get to bikes in just a moment. There's a great piece in the New York Post, an editorial about this has got to stop. This mayor with his crazy, they call it bike supremacy. They want bikes to take over from cars. We'll get to that in a moment on 710 WOR. Check out the webpage. There's some great stuff up there. Here's one of the most, this got overlooked in all the Mueller disastrous testimony. Look where a lot of his information came from. This is frightening. Look where a lot of his information came from. You'll see that video. Also, watch Mueller get confronted with the biggest single lie he's been telling. And now watch this. Bill Clinton said everything that Donald Trump has said about immigration, illegals, border. Clinton said exactly the same things. Watch this video where he says it and all the Democrats cheer. It's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com/Mark. 710WOR.com/Mark.
Mark Simone on 710WOR.
Hey, we'll take some calls. 800-321-0710 is the number. So, big editorial in the New York Post today, and they're absolutely right. This mayor and these other politicians pushing bikes way too much. We don't need all these bike lanes. You know, for a million years, there were no bike lanes. And if you think back to the 80s, 90s, there were more bikes then without the bike lanes. Have you noticed now there's less bikes than ever before? Maybe it's because of Uber and all that stuff. But bike lanes, they're talking about another 80 miles. That's some ridiculous figure, like 400 miles of bike lanes. But remember, what that means is you're taking away hundreds of miles of parking spaces. Yeah, under Bloomberg created 400 miles of bike lanes. The mayor, de Blasio, has added 160 miles. That's almost 600 miles of parking spaces gone.
Oy.
And this is all for these stupid bikes. Have you seen this new one that's coming in? There's City Bike, of course. Then there's a new one. What's it called? Is it Jump or something like that? They look like City Bikes, only they're red. Only they got a little motor in them. So if you start to get a little slow, the motor kicks in. So they'll go much faster.
Yeah, that's real smart.
Yeah, so... it's a way of the problem with the bike. Oh, it's too slow. You want to be able to go 30, 40. How can we do that? Let's figure out something to put in the bike. We already have something that does that. It's called a car, a cab, an Uber. That's how you go that fast. These bikes are absolutely destroying the city. First of all, this is not Florida. This is a place where you can't ride a bike 6 months of the year. It's too cold. Also, it's the last thing we need. And by the way, these new bikes, this Jump, they don't use racks. You know, City Bike, you put it in the rack. These you just leave wherever you want to leave them. You push something and it locks it.
Anywhere?
Anywhere. This is going to be a huge problem, yeah. And then when you want one, you go to the app. It shows you where the closest one is, and you go. They give you a code to unlock it. But people are going to be leaving these all over the place. This is a disaster. This bike's taken over from cars. Dumbest idea in the world. Idiotic idea, but when it's an idiotic idea, count on Mayor de Blasio to lead the charge. Let's go to Rob in Long Island. Rob, what do you want to say?
Oh, hey, Mark, thank you. I just wanted to tell you I was excited to hear the president finally go after these representatives in these cities. And one of the issues that I always wonder about is that in New York, you have a statistic, most of it's all coming from the Wall Street Journal, that in 2016, of all the kids that graduated New York City high schools with the city colleges, 80% were rejected and told they needed to take remedial classes.
Yeah.
They're having the debates in Detroit. Both the Jackie Robinson School District in New York and Brooklyn, who was an icon, as well as the Ben Carson School District in Detroit, trending around 11% literacy, 20% math competency test scores.
Yeah, good points. Democrats are going to have a real problem. You know, they'll scream racism for 3 or 4 days, but once they cried wolf enough times and people get sick of hearing that, they're going to start to look at this problem. The president has stepped on the third rail for Democrats. Why don't they clean up these neighborhoods? Why do they allow that to go on for decades? Why don't they fix the schools? They're going to have a lot of problems because a lot of voters can start to really focus on Democrats talk, make speeches, and do nothing. Let's go to Chris, a Republicans too, by the way. Chris in New York City, what do you want to say?
Yeah, good morning.
Chris? Yes.
They're talking about the increased deaths of bicyclists in New York City. Bloomberg was saying that it's the highest it's ever been, and it's only July.
Yeah.
It's because of these damn bike lanes. I'm 66 years old. I grew up riding my bike as a kid all over the city, over the 59th Street Bridge on the side thing. Never had a problem. Now they got these damn bike lanes. People open up the car doors into the bike lane. I've seen bicyclists just hit because it's in the center. He's created islands for the bikes, and they have a false sense of security.
Absolutely. It's ridiculous. I'll tell you why the other reason is. They're using this for revenue. That way, any cars in the bike lane, they give it a ticket. They gave out 9,000 of these tickets for blocking the bike lane. They don't ticket bikes. Start ticketing the bike riders. That'll force them to stop at a red light. That'll force them to be more careful. You'll see a difference. And you can raise revenue off these bikes. Hey, when we come back, Ken Jennings will be with us. I want to hear this. To me, he's the all-time Jeopardy champion. Ken Jennings, we'll talk to him in just a moment. Coming up on 710 WOR, let's get the latest news. Here's Joe Burrow.
Now you can catch up with what you missed from Mark Simone on demand. Catch his podcasts at 710WOR.com/Mark. Mark Simone.
On the voice of New York.
710 WOR.
Well, with us right now, of course, you know Ken Jennings, best-selling author, Jeopardy champ, and he's got a new great television series, Game Show Network, Best Ever Trivia Show. It's going to be weekdays at 4 o'clock. Ken Jennings, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Now, I don't know if you remember this. You were on with me once. I think it was 2005. You were in the studio. We played Jeopardy live against each other. I mentioned this because
I
get the impression it wasn't the biggest moment in your life. You might have forgotten about it.
You'll have to remind me. Did I win? Did you win? What happened?
I beat you on one question. You then beat me on 12. So
I like how you lead with. You should write your stop after that first part when you tell the story.
Yeah, but forget the questions. Just on hitting the buzzer, you beat me every time.
The buzzer is tricky. That's what people don't understand about Jeopardy. Like, all those people are smart every night. And most people know most of the answers. It often just comes down to who has figured out the timing of the tricky little button.
Yeah. So this new guy, he's no Ken Jennings. I mean, you're the one everybody remembers.
He is very close to a Ken Jennings. I mean, he came within one game of beating my cash record, and he did it by making big bets, like doubling the amount I won every night. Jim Holtower was just fantastic, and it's exciting for me to have people talking about Jeopardy. It's funny that this 35-year-old show can still go viral every night if weird happens or Alex Trebek raps or whatever it takes, a funny viral clip, and people are still watching Jeopardy. I love it.
Hey, that thing about taking the hardest question, the biggest question first, how come you didn't think of that?
I did think of that. It's not my style. Like, the thing about James starting from the bottom up is you amass a ton of money quick, so you can bet big on the first Daily Double and, like, put the game away before the first commercial break. Yeah. It's amazing. It's a real shock and awe kind of strategy. But there is something to be said for the continuity of just kind of playing the game in a more relaxed way, the way you do at home. Less nerve-wracking bets, a way that feels comfortable to you. And honestly, I think that's the secret behind my streak. Like, I was on for 6 months because it was very low impact. I was just kind of playing the game the way I did at home.
Yeah, he's a real gambler, who like a risk-taking gambler, so that's his style.
Professional gambler, yeah, he's perfect for that.
So the new show is Best Ever Trivia Show, Game Show Network, every day at 4 o'clock, and you're one. It's kind of like, would you say, American Idol with trivia? I mean, there's three judges. It sounds like a great idea for a show.
Kind of. The other trivia experts and I are a panel, and the other contestants have to go head-to-head against us. If they want to get out of there alive, they have to do well in the trivia games against us. So it's less like we're, American Idol judges, choosing who we like, and more like if Paul Abdul actually had to sing against the players. But it's a lot of fun. It's very relaxed and chill. It's kind of a match game kind of vibe where we really want to see them win some money, even if we're the enemy. It's a good show.
That's a good way to put it. It's like a match game for geniuses.
Yes, finally. Honestly, I think the match game is the match game for geniuses. I'm a huge fan of match game, less Charles Nelson Reilly.
Ken Jennings, listen, you're a genius. You can remember, every answer in Jeopardy. But do you, like the rest of us, you can't remember where you put your keys? Do you forgot where you put your phone? Do you go through that?
I am extremely absent-minded, yeah. And I think it might be connected. Like, all the parts of my brain that are remembering Best Supporting Actress winners are not good at knowing where I put my phone. It really seems to be a problem. And so my wife is very good at this kind of stuff. And I'll be like, I'm looking in the drawer. Where is it? And she's like, it's red. It's literally right in front of you. So we have our specialty.
Say, after Jeopardy, didn't you play against the computer? You battled that computer a while back.
Yeah, IBM built Watson to play Jeopardy, a question-answering computer. And it kicked our butts.
So what do you think about AI taking over a lot of stuff? These computers can outthink us. Like even medical like scans, they have the AI read it. It can read it in more detail than any human. What's going to happen with all that?
It really was kind of a moment of reckoning when the computer cleaned my clock at Jeopardy, and I realized how much of my self-image as a person was just like, hey, this is my thing that I'm good at. I answer questions, you know. Go ahead and shoot.
Yeah.
And when I realized that all it took was a few million dollars and an IBM research lab to make my skill obsolete, that really was kind of eye-opening to me. And it really made me think a lot about all the other jobs that that's going to be happening to. You know, truck drivers think they have a safe job, and pharmacists think they have a safe job, and like you say, medical diagnosis. But the machines are coming for that too, and it's a little bit scary. We're going to have to figure out how to build a society where you know, the toil of our sweat to make a few coins is not the thing that gives us meaning, because the economy is not going to work like that for long. Yeah.
Well, we're talking with Ken Jennings. Hey, before I forget, you wrote a great book. I love this book. It's called Planet Funny, and it's all about comedy and its history, and it's like an incredible diagnosis of comedy. What gave you the idea for that?
I was always a comedy nerd as a kid, class clown type. But I did start to notice that, I think I was getting on Twitter and noticing that the pace of the jokes in our society was really accelerating. Like, yeah, we were joking all the time. Like, if you're on social media, you can read 100 jokes a minute about whatever the latest news or viral thing is. And then I started to notice that was true of everything as well. Advertising had to be funny. Politics had to be funny now. The media. It was really changing the way our culture worked, that, you know, a laugh was the ultimate goal. And I kind of wondered what that was doing to us. So the book is an exploration of that. And that it's honestly a little scary. I don't think it's been great that we're
with our
funny bone and voting with our funny bone. And it's not great.
It's a very important book people should read. You know, it starts with the Daily Show and people getting their news from a Tonight Show monologue or a Daily Show. And generations grew up that way.
Yeah, it's weird now that people are genuinely getting their news from comedy shows, and they experience it through the hundreds of social media jokes they see about it. Like, some of this stuff should be serious, you know. You shouldn't vote for a candidate just because it's a troll or a irony. Like, that's kind of dangerous for our country.
All right, well, Ken Jennings got a big new show coming on the game. I love the Game Show Network, but this is called the Best Ever Trivia Show. It's weekdays at 4 o'clock. Ken Jennings, as long as we have you here, let's test you out with some trivia. The name of the name of the dog that played Lassie. Yeah.
Oh, Rudy Weatherwax was the trainer. Was the dog Lassie?
Yes, very good. How many people would know the name of the trainer of the dog of Lassie? Now, how does a guy like you get to be a guy like you? Is it just having born with this memory?
I feel like my memory is maybe about the same as everybody else's. It's just honestly curiosity. Like, if you're interested, like if you read about the guy who trained Lassie and you're like, huh, wow, that's actually kind of a story. It will stick whether you want it to or not. So the trick is curiosity.
Yeah, but you know, most people wouldn't. They'd say, "I read this article. This guy that trained Lassie, they never remember the name. You just have this this Watson kind of memory there." So
maybe there is some kind of training too. You know, where, you know, my whole life I've enjoyed trivia games, so some part of me is like, "Hey, you better remember that date. That might come up."
So for somebody listening right now, there's a lot of people that dream is to get on Jeopardy. What advice would you give them? How to practice? How to study?
The main thing you can do is just watch the show. Like, watch the show religiously and try to get into the rhythm of Alex's voice and the contestants' answers, because that's how you'll figure out the button, the tricky button. Because, you know, you can't buzz in whenever you know it. You have to wait till Alex finishes reading the question. And then there's a human that flips the switch somewhere. That makes the buzzers live. And if you buzz in a little early, before he's flipped that switch, you get locked out for a fraction of a second.
Oh.
So you'll often see people buzzing too early, buzzing too late. But there's a rhythm you can get into with Alex's voice. And if you've been watching the show for decades, you can kind of do it.
Huh.
So, I mean, that's the main thing to do, is just, like, make his voice everything. His last syllable, wait a brief pause, and then go, go, go.
Very interesting. Well, everybody watch the Best Ever Trivia Show. It's going to be on the Game Show Network every day at 4 o'clock. And Ken Jennings, thanks for being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Oh. Interesting stuff. You know, that's true now. When you go get a CAT scan or a, you know, some kind of a test. The radiologist looks at it. The doctor looks at it. They see what they see. But now they have this send it to somewhere in California where AI, artificial intelligence, looks at the test. And if you ask the doctor, the top radiologist, you know, say, well, why can't you see what's in there? And they say, because there's like 4 million things to look at within that test, and we can look at 400 of them. But the AI can go through everything in that test, see things humans can't even see potential stuff. You know, because they say radiologists sometimes miss 30% of stuff you could see in the scan. However, sometimes the AI sees stuff in such excruciating detail that it can see problems that you really don't have to worry about for 50 years. So, but that AI taking over everything. A technology changing things faster and faster and faster. Now, being a photographer all my life, the iPhone 10, the camera is so phenomenal. The quality of the iPhone 10 camera is so good, you almost don't need, for most things, to lug around your big, 35-millimeter camera. But for certain things, you need them. And I always wonder, like, Nikon and Canon, probably the two best camera companies. What's going to happen to these companies? How do they survive in the smartphone era? The iPhone 11 is about to come out. That's going to be a three-lens camera, even more amazing than the 10. This could be the death of these cameras. So I didn't realize, but, first of all, digital cameras, Nikon, Canon, the big cameras, they've declined dramatically. The percentage every year has declined and declined and declined. But these companies are getting into other businesses. Nikon, their main business now is imaging sensors, medical equipment, B2B products. Nikon is also big in lithography systems, microscopes, other precision instruments. So they're slowly moving out of this stuff. You know, you look back at Kodak. Was there a bigger company in America than Kodak? Rochester, New York, world headquarters of Kodak. All they made was film. They just, as the digital cameras started coming in, late 90s, they just didn't see the future. They didn't respond fast enough. They didn't switch into other businesses. Hey, check out the webpage. A lot of good stuff up there. A lot of great videos. Watch this. This is the Mueller hearings went on for so long that nobody could watch the whole thing. You might have missed this little part here. This was quite an exchange. Look where a lot of the information in the Mueller report came from. It'll surprise you. Also, watch Robert Mueller get confronted with the single biggest lie in his report and watch him react. Hey, also watch this video. Bill Clinton, when he was president, said everything Donald Trump has said about illegal aliens, about the border, about the wall, about immigrants. There's no difference. Bill Clinton said everything Donald Trump said. Watch when Bill Clinton said it, all the Democrats applauding. It's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com/mark. 710WOR.com/mark.